Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show. Hour two on a Tuesday. Appreciate everybody coming here. Getting your college football convo for 2 hours a day. We've been doing it for about a decade, so thank y'all. Just had Dave Bartu on the Duncan Newsmaker line. Dave Bartu is CFB Matrix, and it's about asset allocation. It's about how do we use our shekels, our widgets. How do we make the most of whatever it is we have, people, money, time. So Dave Bartu does. So appreciate him coming on every Tuesday. Coming up in about 15 minutes, Auburn has been busy, specifically in the portal, specifically on the defensive line. We'll talk to our good friend Jason Caldwell about what's going on with Auburn. And then bottom of the hour, we're going to have Rod Babers on, talk Texas. And when I say talk Texas, there's one thing that I don't know if I want to talk this, ask it. I want to ruminate. I want to consider. I want to let this percolate because it's been. Y'all see what Arch Manning did in the Texas spring game? Hey, did you see what Arch Manning put up Saturday?
Big day for him. Got a chance to show off a little bit.
Oh, stretch them legs, son. Stretch out, Arch. First pass attempt, he went house call, 75 yards. Completed all 10 of his first passes. And, folks, he finished with 355 yards in a game where you don't play enough to finish with 355 yards. So, and they don't provide stats, but he threw three touchdowns and completed just about everything, blah, blah, blah. And Quinn Ewers didn't really play, and he played just a couple of series. He's going to be a third-year starter, and he's Quinn Ewers, and we've already seen him do it, that when Dallas Turner doesn't fall on him or he doesn't stumble, like he just fell out of a helicopter and hurt his shoulder, Quinn Ewers is a stud. Quote from Steve Sarkisian, I know what Quinn's about. So Quinn played a couple of snaps. So then Arch Manning went out there, and he turned it into an Arena League game. And Sarkisian said, I wanted Arch to be able to just go play football, hadn't really played in about a year. And so then he talked about some of the specifics, blah, 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 blah. And Sarkisian was just effusive, and you didn't have to really invent stuff because the kid was just dialing it around all over the field with a bunch of kids in some cases. Do you know what's supposed to be true about a backup quarterback in a spring game? It really is a thing to be running scout team with the next year's starters at receiver. It really is an advantage for you and these four or five kids to all kind of go through the same experience as scout team, and 1 week you're Kansas State and then the next week you're Texas Tech. That's a real thing. There's advantage there. You don't even get that advantage as much anymore because you're so frustrated by sitting the bench at Texas that you transfer. Or you're Arch Manning and you don't. And when I say you get frustrated because it's Texas and I sat the bench and I didn't get my touches and I want to, then you're Isaiah Neyor and you transfer and go to Nebraska. Or you're Casey Kane, who's a receiver, and you transfer and you go to UNLV. You do that because I'm used to getting my touches and I didn't. And so I'm Darian Brown. I'm a running back. I was a four-star in-state running back and I went to Texas and I didn't get my touches, so I'm going to jump in the portal. That's what you do. It's also what you do if you're the backup quarterback and you realize all that stuff Chuck just said about Quinn Ewers, I see it every day at practice, and then I see it every day on every Saturday when we play the opponent, BYU or Arkansas or whomever. So Malik Murphy decided, since I know what's true about Quinn, and since I know he's returning in 24, that means I'm transferring. And Malik Murphy transferred. He tipped. Duke, here I come. Are we aware there was another Texas quarterback last year, three-star in-state kid who, more than anything, I think he wanted to play at Texas? Charles Wright, three-star quarterback from Austin High in Austin, Texas, and he had a year at UT, and he got to run out of the tunnel, and there's a team photo, and there's an individual, and forever and ever, Charles Wright and his great-grandparents, and then also the great-grandkids eventually. Everybody knows that Charles played for Texas. Now Charles is at App State, which is where Charles can actually play because Quinn Ewers is there. Arch Manning didn't transfer, and I hadn't heard a word about Arch Manning transferring, and even though Arch was a freshman last year, and as, again, Steve Sarkisian, quote, Arch hasn't really played in about a year. All right, Arch entered last year as a true freshman, a five-star, and he didn't play at all, basically, two games. Arch is, I mean, Malik Murphy, he had a pretty good grasp on the situation. Charles Wright had a good grasp on the situation. They jumped in the portal along with like 20 other former Longhorns who looked at the depth chart and said, you know what, there's somewhere else for me to be. Arch entered as a true freshman, didn't play. He's about to be a redshirt freshman. He still isn't going to play. Now, the starter, stuff has happened. He's gotten fallen on. He's fallen wrong. A pigeon could crap on him. I don't, like, something could happen. And Quinn Ewers has to miss time. You just don't know. But Arch Manning, isn't he supposed to be in the portal? And I know all the reasons we can cite that hanging around, getting coached by Sarkisian for a couple of years and watching Quinn Ewers play for 2 years, that's not the worst thing in the world, and it's not. Doesn't Arch Manning have that brain cell that says, I can take this job? Because I haven't seen anything otherwise. I have seen that the family grand plan from Grandpa on through Arch himself, the plan is he'll show up and he won't play. And then the second year, he'll return, and he also won't play. Like, who else starts the scenario of their college career, especially as a five-star quarterback, like that? Who else describes that? What we're planning is, like, isn't he supposed to either be in the portal or saying, I'm entering spring to take this job. I'm good enough. I'm taking the job. Quinn can transfer or go supplemental draft or whatever. I'm taking it. I don't worry from him. You're supposed to have that at least a little bit, aren't you? I think. Even if you know it's not true. Didn't Tate Martell say something to Justin Fields about better not miss twice? Don't come after my job. Basically, he's saying, yeah, because you didn't get it in Athens and you're not going to get it here either. And he probably paused and went, punk. And then Tate Martell transferred to become a wide receiver at Miami. So, realism, it's there as well. But again, a quarterback for two seasons without one word about, I'm going to take this job, I'm going to win. It just is one of those things I'm looking at thinking I'm supposed to hear something about that, I think. Hey, how's your Tuesday, man?
Oh, it's pretty good. Yeah, the one thing is, again, when you've got the Eli plan, remember, even Peyton wasn't supposed to play his first year, and then Jerry Colquitt and Helton both got hurt, and all of a sudden, boom, it's the Peyton Manning, Brandon Stewart show there in the first year, and it's Brandon Stewart concluding, yeah, probably going to need to go somewhere else like College Station to get on the field. I just think that's the family way. So if you do start to chirp or say anything, which he didn't say anything basically his whole recruitment anyway, no. But if he did, you're almost kind of saying, yeah, I'm different. I'm built different than the dudes who went number one overall in the draft. I'm built different. I'm not sure that would land super well. Chuck, we have a piece of news that I will say Deion Sanders has been making some noise with some of the kids he's pulled in. He's had some high-profile kids come in the last week or so. Into Boulder. There is now an SEC school that may have to be a little concerned about that. Mississippi State transfer running back commitment Rashad Amos reportedly will visit Colorado this week. He had already committed to Mississippi State earlier this month, but obviously hasn't enrolled yet. And Chuck, I have never been to Starkville, so I will admit that I am playing from behind in the sense that I have never personally experienced the Little Dewey or the other cultural delights in Starkville. However, I will say, I believe most people empirically give the edge to Boulder over Starkville as just a place to live, hang out, and so forth. I have no idea how the NIL money stacks up for the two against each other, but if you're just talking about flashy coach and place to live, I'm not sure that's a game that Starkville is necessarily prepared to win right now against Boulder.
No, background of the Rocky Mountains and the clean, free air of Colorado, it's a totally different environment than Starkville, Mississippi, especially in August.
Yeah, so just, you know, something to keep an eye on if you're a Mississippi State fan. Also, this was something I thought was interesting, Chuck. Clemson is doing something that lots of programs do this time of year, the whole bit where you take the coaches around, the football coach, the basketball coach, maybe the women's basketball coach, depending on your school. And, you know, you take them around and you meet with the booster clubs for a week or two and rally everybody in some of the key states. Maybe you come into a place like Charlotte or Atlanta for depending on what your school is. You know, maybe you cross the state line into a big city nearby. 6-7 of those kind of things. Clemson, for the first time ever, is telling media members, yeah, don't bother coming. You're not allowed to cover the event other than just to cover it, but you can't talk to the coaches. We're not going to give you your 10 minutes with Dabo before or after. You're not getting Dabo. You're not getting any of the coaches. We're not doing that. And the whole reason for this, Chuck, is because they're looking to get them more time with the donors. Translation, it's NIL time. We want you guys to feel special. Joe at home watching on the TV didn't get to hear from Dabo. You got to talk to Dabo. You got to hear from Dabo about how much your NIL money is helping. I don't know if everybody's going to copy this. I don't know if it's going to land well with Clemson fans that other programs will be getting attention because they'll be doing interviews and Clemson won't. Maybe they'll change this. But I thought it was interesting that this is exactly the opposite of how it used to be. You know, you've done these interviews through the years where, you know, the Tennessee coach rolls through Atlanta or whatever, and while he's in town, hey, let's talk to the local radio station or whatever. Clemson said, nope, not us.
Yeah, it's always been the chance to stay relevant and in the news during the, what is it, the Rebel Road Trip or the Tiger Track, or everybody has a name for it. And it is about access. And it is about, I mean, this is, I say this is a bad thing, okay? When I can invoke Colonel Tom Parker's marketing approach as what you're doing, it, yeah, is it going to work? Maybe. Is it in the best taste and long-term success? Maybe not. His phrase was, never give away what you can sell. And so, it all kinds of schlock and repackaged whatever. You're not getting great insight when you're on any sort of either post-spring football game media session, tour to the six cities that have the most NC State grads. You're not getting great insight. What you're doing is called a touch point. It's just getting out there and saying to these 400, these 2,000, you know, I'm the head coach and you remember me last year. There's a lot of value to it, and now they're actually putting a specific number beside that value. So if you can help raise funds and compete in the name, image, likeness era, then access is one of those things that people absolutely sell. And it is true. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, talk a little Auburn football next.
Now back to Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
Been rolling for almost a decade, 9 states and 60 sticks. We talk college football for 2 hours a day. Thank y'all so much for that. Marcus Harris, big kid from Montgomery, Kansas for a minute, but from Montgomery. And I don't know, you weigh 300 pounds and get 7 sacks in the SEC? You're doing work, man. And now he's hoping to do work on Sundays and get game checks and eventually a pension and then be able to, like, retire to Gulf Shores. That's what I want to do. And I think Marcus Harris may be a little closer to that than I am. But we're going to talk about one departing Auburn Tiger, and then we're going to talk a bunch of Tigers who may replace Marcus Harris. I want to welcome on right now our good friend, 24th year covering Auburn. Auburn Undercover, it's 247, Jason Caldwell. How you doing, friend?
Good, sir. How about you?
No, nothing but bless. Marcus Harris, he's an NFL player, isn't he? Like, when's he going to be drafted? What's the expectation, the talk?
I think he's an NFL guy. I mean, just watching him, how athletic he is, the quickness he has off the ball, and he's not a small guy, like you said. Now, he's not the biggest guy in terms of length, but I think we've seen in the NFL that that you've seen some guys that were 5'10", 5'11", go out and make plays in the NFL. He's 6'2", 6'2 and a half. I mean, he's plenty big enough. But I think somebody, you know, will be a team in you know, fifth round, fourth round that says, hey, that guy's just going to be a football player and just go get him. And I think that's what he is.
So most of my life that I've been conscious of Auburn football, even in the tough days, like 2008, Jason, you were there every week. You watched them win a game 3-2. You were probably at that Vanderbilt game where they lost 14-13. Even in the toughest days for Auburn football, they usually played pretty salty defense. They'd still pass licks. It's been a minute since they've been really good on the run in particular, and it just hadn't been really Auburn defense. Talk about transfers. Talk about coaching either new coaches or sort of reassigning duties of some guys that are still here. Just talk about the overall side of the ball because so much was about the QBs and offense. Talk about Auburn defense being Auburn defense again.
Yeah, no, I think it's, you know, we've seen, you know, some of the transformation, and it's been a transformation of an entire roster. I think with the couple of losses, I did a story earlier this week, and I think since then we've seen Jay Fair and Wesley Steiner go in the portal. I believe now the number of guys that are still left on this roster that Hugh Freeze hasn't and his staff haven't brought in, and it's only been 16 months. I think the number's 18. I think there's 18 guys left from the previous two coaching staffs. A lot of those are still left from Gus Malzahn. So they had to rebuild things, and that's been at the line of scrimmage maybe more than anywhere. And I think you look and if you don't have a Derrick Brown or a Nick Fairley or that type of guy, then you better have a bunch of depth and be able to rotate guys. And I think that's been the goal for Auburn because you're not going to find Derrick Brown in the transfer portal right now. That guy's just not going to be out there. So they've gone out and added some quality depth on the defensive line. That's where it starts. But like you said, you bring in DJ Durkin, bring in Charles Kelly, Vontrell King Williams, the guy that was on the staff already but moves on the field with Jeremy Garrett moving to the NFL. And there have been some changes, but I think the biggest change is the style of play. I think it's going to be a more aggressive defense, and I think that's the way you have to play defense right now in this game. It's hard to go and average, you know, give up 7 points a game. Now you better go get the ball back and create some turnover and create negative plays, and I think that's going to be more of the style of play they have now.
All right, so Auburn brings in three linemen. They got a kid coming in from Arkansas State, one from USC, one from Indiana. They're all, I mean, it's not exactly the same thing as a kid from Wetumpka, one from Beauregard, and one from Huntsville. I mean, you know, there's tape of these guys against college kids. What is the thought about the Auburn defensive line coming out of spring? Like, were you expecting them to address this in numbers?
Yes, this has been kind of the thought process. Really since probably January, knowing that this was going to be a need, even if guys stepped up in the spring, they knew that there was going to be some roster turnover and they were also going to need more bodies there. Because like I said, the goal for them has been to try to create more depth and to try to be as fresh as possible in the fourth quarter and as fresh as possible in game 12 and 13 and beyond. And I think it's something they've been able to do. But I thought they made some improvements in the spring. I thought the spring game was a big step forward for them, even though the offense was, you know, you're not scheming. Auburn didn't scheme in a spring game. They just basically played straight up. So the defense got to kind of pin their ears and go. And I thought they made some plays happen. But I think you look at it, and now it's from a, you know, line of scrimmage standpoint, defensive line standpoint, can you find a couple of difference makers? Because that's what it takes. Can Keldrick Falk be that guy in year two? Jalen McLeod, obviously off the edge. Now you add in, I think, a really talented player from Arkansas State that's only played football for 3 years. He was a basketball guy And so I think a lot of upside along with these talented newcomers. And can you find playmakers? That's the name of the game now.
Last thing, and this is maybe just a yes, no. Did you even have 30 seconds of worry or a cocked eyebrow when the Kentucky basketball job was open? Do you think you're going to have to make some updates to the site?
I did not. Not really. I think 20 years ago, you probably do. But I think we've seen that, I mean, Auburn's a place you can win at, and Bruce Pearl has done it. And I think Auburn's a place where you can get paid, and that's happening with Bruce Pearl. And so I think it's also a place where you appreciate what you built, and you're never going to be the guy at Kentucky, but you're the guy at Auburn. And I think we saw that this year with several other coaches going, hey, I'm happy. 20 years ago, people aren't turning down Kentucky, and now you can.
Oh, yeah. It's so interesting that the Auburn basketball coach was at least a conversation, a talking point, a maybe for the Kentucky job. I was like, that's the biggest indication of where the arena and Pearl and the fans and the players and all that stuff's got the program. Jason, thank you for coming on, man. I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Chuck. Appreciate it.
Jason Caldwell, Truist reporter for Auburn, from Auburn Undercover. And I always appreciate his expertise, but that the Auburn basketball coach would be a consideration, a maybe. And I don't know, based on who they hired and who they got the Heisman from. No, thanks. I'll stay where, you know, maybe that was Bruce Pearl. I don't know, but my goodness. The fact that you could consider the Auburn basketball program home compared to maybe taking that job. And so he's been there a decade now, and so it's just it was an important moment, potentially. Would have been the changing moment, but as he said, and I was talking about this to start the program with Kirby Smart, that you go to Kentucky and there is a likely way that it ends up. You're either fired / you're owed $33 million and you're so done with it. Now, you knew you were going to land somewhere with equal cash, but you were owed $33 million and you just went palms up and said, yeah, y'all can have this job. Like, nobody quits that job, do they? That was the Kentucky job. That was the mirror moment for them. As far as facts goes, those are as cold and hard as they come for Kentucky basketball. And so Auburn was one of those programs that was able, and all of this gets set in motion, not even by Arkansas. Not even by USC, further down the line from there. So basketball money in the SEC is running things as well, even in the offseason and even during spring practice. So, again, appreciate Jason coming on. Chuck Oliver Show continuing on the Tuesday. Going to take a couple of minutes break. Come back. More conversation next.
Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the King of College Football, Chuck.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
This morning in the Atlanta airport, no one's missing a meal on Mac Wilburn's watch. With 11 restaurants to serve passengers, he's got dining for every destination. And it all started when Mac talked with First Horizon Bank about opening a franchise in the airport. Now it's open for business and cleared for takeoff. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Mac. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Oliver on Southern Sports Today.
It's all college football. Chuck Oliver Show. Been doing it for a decade. Thank y'all for the blessing. 9 states and 60 sticks. We talk 2 hours a day. About a month back, Brian Kelly, LSU head coach, he basically cut like a WWE promo. He grabbed the mic after a scrimmage, and he looked into the camera and said, I want every defensive tackle in America to know I'm coming for you. Like he should have just dropped it. They're playing wrestling music in the background. He walks off in the pyrotechnics. He was clear. He was like, I need defensive linemen, sure, but specifically tackles, and I need you, and I'm coming for you. We just talked Auburn, Hugh Freeze. Portal's been open like 12 minutes. He's got 3 tackles. Steve Sarkisian, quote, we don't have enough big humans. That's the Texas head coach, and that's about as sophisticated as you need to put it. He's, quote, we need more tackles. that's become position du jour. Want to welcome on right now, 101.9 The Horn. That's Mornings in Austin. It's Rod Babers. Rod, welcome to the program. How you doing today, friend?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me, brother. I appreciate it, man. College football, baby. Let's get into it.
Yeah, Bear Alexander, I saw a couple of weeks ago that rumor that he was going to get in the portal, and then he didn't, and he got broke off by USC to stay. And I was like, Bear is probably a marketing major or a PR major because he understands he's in demand right now. It has become defensive tackles. Talk about Steve. So we'll get to Arch and all that. Talk about defensive linemen, defensive tackles, the portal, and where the horns go over the next few weeks.
Yeah, no question. Texas just lost the best defensive tackle duo in the country in Byron Murphy and Devontae Sweat. Byron Murphy will be a first-round pick. Devontae Sweat stock is dropping a little bit after that DWI. But it is a coveted position. Right now, it's considered a premium position, just really quick, in the NFL. Last season, you're going to look at the top 12 highest-paid players in the league, half of them defensive tackles. Why? Because everybody wants to play two high safeties these days, so you have numbers in the passing game, but they want to be able to do that, but you can only do that with light boxes. So you need big humans up front that can clog up multiple gaps, or you need guys that demand a double team, so you flip the numbers advantage back in your favor in the front. That's why D-tackle becoming more and more of a coveted position. Now, getting to Texas, the only, not say the only, one of the big weaknesses, the big holes on the roster, I would say the most concerning, is defensive tackle. Now with Devontae Sweat and Byron Murphy gone, you talked about how Stark, after the spring game, said, we need more big humans. It's specifically in the interior D-line where they got a commitment just yesterday of Bill Norton. He's an Arizona defensive tackle. Their second Arizona defensive tackle, actually, they've gotten in the transfer portal, the first one in the spring portal. They got Tia Savea previously from Arizona. There's a connection there. Johnny Nansen, the new co-DC at Texas, was the defensive coordinator at Arizona. That was a really good defense last year. And now Texas has two of the defensive tackles from that specific defense already on the 40 acres. But Stark says he wants more. Jay Toya was another player, a defensive tackle from UCLA that was on campus for the spring game, but there are reports that he is going to stay at UCLA and not come. So Dominique Williams, the TCU D-tackle who's in the transfer portal, fantastic young player, was a freshman All-American. He is considered right now the top target, one of the guys they have to get. They're going to go all in on the young man.
Rod Babers deals it out at 101.9 The Horn every morning in Austin. I just want to, just for anecdotal purposes maybe, Zach Swanson was a kid. He was a four-star. Played a total of 18 snaps over the last two seasons. And was he one of those kids that, like, it was a mutual thing? Maybe you should, yeah, I will, for him to transfer? Or are they looking at Zach Swanson going, we had plans and now he's left?
No, it was more of a mutual thing. Starts being pretty upfront with guys. They're starting to have their meetings after spring about, you know, their status with the team. Yep. And the truth is, he just hadn't really been able to crack, especially at D-tackle right now, considering they're looking for guys. He still hadn't been able to really crack that rotation. So I think it's more of a mutual thing.
All right, well, let's turn it around and talk about what's known. And according to Sark, Quinn Ewers is known. I've said there's a couple of weird things. A Bama kid fell on him, and then he fell weird on his own shoulder. Other than that, Quinn Ewers is a stud. Let's talk about Arch Manning, because that kid lit it up, which you can kind of do that in a spring game, I guess. But tell me what you saw in person.
Yeah, I got to tell you, Arch Manning looks like he could be the real deal. I mean, of course, he's a Manning, but he operated with that Manning-like efficiency in the pocket. I think he had his first incompletion around, like, the 14th target of the game, his 14th pass attempt. And that's because he came and blitzed him, which they don't usually do in a spring game, but I think they were tired of Manning making the defense look so bad. 19 of 26, 355 yards passing, three touchdowns. He had one interception. That was only in the Hail Mary at the end of the game. He looked like the three-year veteran, and that was on purpose. Quinn only got two series, so he, you know, and he had a pick six, actually. It was a tip pass on an RPO. It ended up being returned by big man Alfred Collins for a touchdown. But no, man, I would say that Arch Manning looked great. It's hard to live up to the hype. It's hard to exceed expectations. He's a Manning, so the expectations are sky high, and yet he did. He had great anticipatory chemistry with the wide receivers, able to not only only throw two open receivers, but throw guys open as well. He operated with machine-like efficiency in the pocket, not a lot of wasted movement. I mean, I think the kid's just a high-level quarterback. I think Texas has two starting quarterbacks, and they need it because of the last 25 years, only seven seasons in the last 25 years on the 4 acres have a quarterback started and finished every game in a football season. So the odds are they're going to need Arch, and Arch right now looks like he's up to the task.
Rod, I'm older than you even. You know, you're born in 1980 in Houston. I was born in 67 in Houston, same city.
H-Town, baby, yeah.
But there's this theory that you can't just throw a bunch of receivers out there, that you've got to have chemistry with you. I don't know. In college football, I'm learning season by season now. Maybe you can just bring in an all-star team of receivers or a bunch of transfers at least, and enough of them can shake out. I've talked about that at Bama, at Georgia, et cetera. Talk about the new batch of transfers at Texas, because the last batch of transfers, including A.D. Mitchell, they're off to the NFL, so it's working in Austin.
Sark's offense is a really wide receiver-friendly offense. It is. Even going back to his time at Bama. And I think wide receivers recognize that. Sark's able to explain that to guys, and you can see it. And it starts with the quarterback, right? You want to play with a great quarterback, and Texas might have the best quarterback room in the country. Makes recruiting receivers a lot easier. But via the transfer portal, A.D. Mitchell, obviously, double-digit touchdowns last year in Sark's system. He needs guys that can beat one-on-ones. His offense is going to manufacture and engineer a ton of one-on-ones across the board. And if you can beat one-on-one coverage, then you can play in Sark's offense. And those are the kind of receivers that he likes. Brought in Isaiah Bond. Isaiah Bond fits that mold. He had a long 75-yard touchdown in the game off of press man coverage. That's what Sark wants, a guy that can win one-on-ones. They brought in Matthew Golden from U of H, who I love. I think he's a really good receiver. Quinn Ewers described him as the best hands of that group of wide receivers. But Ryan Wingo is the young star. He had two touchdowns in the spring game. He's not a transfer portal guy. He's a recruit, just a freshman, but a five-star kid. Fantastic player. Might be the most talented, physically talented receiver Texas has had as a freshman since Roy Williams was on campus way back in my day. Really good. Had two touchdowns. He's the future. And in addition to that, they also have DeAndre Moore as a young good wide receiver. This is one of the deepest groups that Texas has had in a long time at the wide receiver position. And I think ultimately it may be one of the deepest groups in the country.
Last thing for you, I mean, I've been watching SEC football my entire life, and I look at Texas, a team, a new program coming into that conference, and I'm like, yeah, they're ready. Am I being too presumptive about that? Because, I mean, I watched them every week, and they look SEC body ready on the line, and they obviously have the quarterback and the coach getting spooked. But, I mean, everything about Texas to me says SEC ready. Is there a blind spot that maybe we're missing?
It would be the interior D-line if there was one, and that's why I think Sark is being so urgent in his need to get a interior defensive line presence, or at least be able to money ball that position. If they were going into the SEC, which they are, but if they were in the SEC right now, I believe the offensive line averages around 330 pounds. That would put them in the top three heaviest offensive lines in the SEC, which would be good. They're deep at the quarterback position. That's where you got to be. They got lots of speed on the outside. That's also something that's very faster in the SEC. I got known quantity in the SEC. They got the speed, they got the size, they got the quarterbacks. I'm with you. I don't see many holes on the roster in terms of this transition to the SEC. They're going to compete for this SEC title in their first year. The only issue would be is the rush defense and the running game period. Running offense and rush defense, are they up to par in the transition going into the SEC? But everything else, I think Texas is going to make some noise.
Varsity Letterman of Texas, NFL vet, and talking about it every morning in Austin. Rod, I appreciate your time, friend. Thank you.
No, thank you. Anytime, brother. Take care.
Rod Babers, 101.9 The Horn. Played at Texas and then was in the NFL for a couple of seasons. And now does it every morning, like I said, 101.9 FM in Austin. So appreciate Rod's time. It is just a totally different environment out there. If you've never been around it, it's fun. I'm not even an overly fun person to have fun in Austin, but I'm just talking about the experience of Texas football. Because A&M has been in the SEC, and that's mostly our footprint, we all got introduced over the last however dozen or so years to Texas A&M. And I think if you didn't know this already, I will say only if Heath wants to dispute, he can jump in. Folks, I knew a lot about Texas A&M football. I had no clue how regimented and tradition, and we do this at every game, and when this happens, this is the response. It is like a bell and then the sound. There's no place in the SEC that is as much about game day tradition as Texas. Like, I mean, a laundry list of them. Texas, yeah, we're just not as familiar. Like, they take it big time serious. Like, it is the game day production in Austin is what it's about. I've mentioned this before. I think Jimbo's first game was a Thursday night. It might have been against Northwestern State. And A&M has this thing where I don't know. I found out about it when maybe Shermer was there. Lock arms and squat a little bit and sway back and forth while, I don't know, you call and respond with the folks in the stands or the cadets or the yell leaders or whoever they are. It's this thing that Jimbo's kind of looking around going, all right, they tried to explain this to me, and I watched a YouTube video, but it's different when you actually have to do it. And he had to pretend like he actually understood all this stuff. At A&M, they may have the belt for, like, how much of that they get incorporated. When this happens, then you do this. It's like Rocky Horror Picture Show for college football. Texas ain't far behind, but it's just the spectacle. I don't know. You see a college cheerleaders wearing fringe chaps. That's not so bad. We're going to take a quick break, come back, wrap up on this Tuesday next.
To the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
And we've got a team that I'm really, really excited about, a really close team as well. So it's paid dividends, I think, with the way that we coach and how we work here. Are there some things that, you know, have definitely changed the way you operate? Absolutely. But that's okay. It is what it is, and we'll go attack it.
Dan Lanning, Oregon head coach. Evolution of building a program. What the game is today, and I don't know exactly where he falls on this, but I believe it's closer to between 1 is Dabo and 100 is Deion Sanders. You don't want to be either of those. You do want to be closer to Deion. Think about the absurd nature of that statement, that there is something about college football coaching. There is something about being a head coach of a power 4-3. 2 program where Deion's way is closer to the right way than Dabo's. That should be a wake-up call. I mean, hint and a half. That is what matters to me today, brought to you by thisstuffmatters.net. There was a headline that I saw. It's about a totally different sport, and it doesn't matter necessarily. It's about the NBA Finals. But a headline, and I may even use the word shocking. Shocking headline. Clutch the pearls. My goodness, what's ahead? Where greed's been thrown around when we are talking about broadcast sports play-by-play content. A game. When we are talking about an NFL, NBA, college football, regular season game, certainly postseason, my goodness, a championship game. When we're talking about those games being streamed, those games being delivered, presented in a way other than, quote, I can't even believe, regular TV or traditional cable or et cetera, whenever we're talking about those, we always get around that great money and that's all they want. Saw a headline, and it was about the NBA Finals, but it was irrelevant. And then the response, shocked! The NBA Finals could soon be behind a streaming paywall. If you don't know, the NBA Finals, who are their partners now? ESPN/ABC, Disney, and TNT. Well, there's a bunch more want to get in now. And so when you already have those two as partners, and now NBC and Comcast and Amazon and whoever else wants to stream, maybe not for the regular season package, but maybe for just the playoffs or maybe just for the finals. So that this media negotiation window is opening and the NBA can put all of their broadcast rights up for bid. The finals could be behind a streaming paywall. If you don't necessarily if you that it's like think Bills and Dolphins playoff game. Wasn't the Bills and Dolphins? No, a Dolphins Chiefs playoff game. It was the streaming only option. That's all you had. It was Peacock. And so not quote regular TV for whatever that is. When I saw that headline that the NBA Finals could soon be behind a streaming paywall, my only response to that was, why wouldn't it be? Like, the first, quote, breakthrough, and we found out it was safety glass, NFL games started moving to cable. Like, Monday Night Football is not on ABC anymore. It's on ESPN. Eh, if you want it, you got it. If it's on a different channel, you find it. True TV for college basketball in March, we get there. But when regular season games that counted in the standings started moving to cable TV only, well, it wasn't as big a deal because, you know, sports fans used to having cable, at least in a lot of cases. There was some pushback, but we got over that pretty quickly. We're to the next level, and we're actually like 10 steps down the road because this has never slowed down, hurting us to the platform that turns the largest profit for whomever paid the gargantuan rights fees. Most recently, folks, that playoff game, that NFL game, NBC, do y'all know the details of this? The game was already going to be played. Like, you didn't have to do anything else. There was a button that you could push, and it could be on CBS. There was another one. It could be on ABC. There was another one. It could be on ESPN. There was another one. It could be on NBC. There was another button you could push. Put it on Peacock. You're still going to play the game. Same players. The stadium was already rented. Like, everything was already in place. And NBC said, instead of pushing any of these buttons that we've always pushed to televise playoff games, if we give you an additional $100 million, will you let us take this game that we're already in charge of and put it on just Peacock? And the NFL is like, yes. If every team gets an additional $3 million out of this just for us saying yes, yes. So if all the league has to do is agree to stream games versus air them on TV or cable, then the league gets way more millions of dollars, and yes, the finals will be going to a paywall for the NBA. Same thing's happening with college football. When people talk about like the Super Bowl or the national championship game being on a on-demand or pay-per-view, absolutely. My question is, why wouldn't it be? And there will still be commercials. That's always the next. It's supposed to be, well, I'm going to pay for it, but at least there's no commercials. Or, well, I'm not going to pay for it, but I get commercials. No, eventually it gets to where you're paying for it and there are commercials. So it's about whatever platform, and it's not a network, it's not a station, it's not a channel, it's a platform now. You know what the original platform was, I think? I don't know. David's not old enough to, well, he probably wasn't alive. The original platform, I think, I'm saying NBC for the 1992 Olympics, they rolled out this thing called the Olympic Triple Cast. It was an actual separate cable channel that got activated. There was the red channel, the white channel, and the blue channel. And during the Olympics for like 2.5 weeks, you could turn on whatever color network and it would be either a team event or an individual thing or like whatever the themes were. Horrible failure. Awful failure. But it was the first thought of NBC was the first big example that I can think of. We paid all of this money. What can we do in addition to the traditional broadcast? And they came up with three more channels. Didn't work. God bless them for trying. What's up, Heath?
So a couple of things here, Chuck. One, John Emery has entered the transfer portal. Guy that had all the talent in the world but has never been able to keep the academics and the other stuff together at LSU. So we'll see where he winds up. This is one that will probably shake people up a little bit more, though. Colorado running back Dylan Edwards going into the portal. This is a kid that last year was a four-star recruit that they flipped from Notre Dame, was four touchdowns in that win against TCU that kind of launched the story of that program last year, getting a win against a team that was in the national title game. Yeah, look, I get it. They're bringing talent in, but Chuck, you have to build something, right? I mean, this kid was a four-star freshman, had success last year, and now he's leaving. I don't know what's going on here. This doesn't make sense. If you can't keep this kid happy, who are you going to keep happy? You cannot have a team that's 85 new faces every year. That's just not going to work.
No, you're giving yourself an additional challenge. Every player that you bring in, you're giving yourself an additional challenge that you, just one more thing that has to mesh. You know, you think about in the NFL, teams that abuse, quote, abuse free agency, they don't wind up really good in the standings. So you're right. It's an avenue to improve yourself, but then there are just some head scratchers because there is that idea of, you know, I talked about returning Letterman or we weren't good against the run last year, or there is the idea of building upon and then getting better. And that breakthrough gets much more difficult when you fruit basket turn over the entire thing. David, Heath, and myself, 22 hours. We'll be back with more.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
Hey Atlanta, Hudson Mason here. Is a new roof still on your to-do list, but you've been delayed due to rising home service costs? Well, here's a fantastic solution from Accent Roofing Service. Zero down, zero payments, and zero interest for a full year. That's right. You can get your new roof now and start paying next year. Act quickly because Accent's incredible offer of 000 with a 12-month deferred payment option for a lifetime roof system isn't going to last long. Contact the craftsman at Accent Roofing Service today, accentroofingservice.com.